with Green Farm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
It's Wednesday, the 1st of July, and as you might have heard, we've got a new sponsor. This is Game On.
Coming up today, are Man United back and can Chelsea go third? We'll be asking Stephen Kelly.
Mason Greenwood has three colleagues in the box. Fernandes is one. And that was absolutely lethal.
Our legend this evening is compostable. It's Peter O'Mahony.
Gets it out to Zeebo. Was it forward? Zeebo gets the ball away. Peter O'Mahony touches down.
Gary Ringrose and Leinster are also driving on.
Ringrose looks to and Ringrose comes through. Oh, brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score. This semi-final is still alive.
And Ireland's Andrew Coscarin talks middle distance running.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donica, we have a new sponsor.
Marie, you will hear zero complaints out of me to have Green Farm on board. I am absolutely delighted.
You know,
quality Irish company that produces delicious, fresh, tasty, convenient products. So I couldn't be happier. It's fantastic to have him on. We're delighted to be working with him. Obviously, they're Irish roots, based in Westmead. But just the nutritional value around their products as well is just through the roof. So I'm giddy about this one, Marie. I think it's a good fit.
You know, during the pandemic, neither of us really achieved a whole lot. You know, we'd seen people's gardens. We'd seen people getting really fit. We saw the size of Johnny Sexton. We could kind of relate to Jurgen Klopp. He didn't achieve a huge amount. He learned how to use the dishwasher and how to make scrambled eggs and how to tie a tie. Now that we've Green Farm on board, we actually have no excuse.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, it is a perfect protein snack. It's perfect for sandwiches. Say you're busy at work, just pick up some stir-fry veg, pick up some Green Farm turkey or beef or chicken, and there's some delicious ones. There's torn turkey breasts, Cajun chicken breasts, simple roast beef. Sounds delicious. I'm getting giddy about it. Do you know, I have a thing though. Everyone looks to different products to, when you're in sport, they look for protein shakes, and there is nothing better than getting your protein from home. So this is an Irish company. You couldn't be eating better. Whatever about using it in a stir fry or a snack or a sandwich or a salad, boom, just throw it in your gear bag in your way. That's your protein shake. Forget about any of that. Eat Irish, eat the best, eat Green Farm.
So when you were training and playing and having to eat lots of food, like how much, what was your intake like of protein?
After a match, I was close on 5,000 calories. And I know you'd say, oh, geez, I'd love that. You wouldn't, I promise you. There is nothing worse than looking at a mountain of food and having to get through it. And I did the wrong thing, Marie. I looked to supplement my diet with different types of, kind of meal replacements. And it's not the way to go. I always found it better if I ate well. If you eat good products like Green Farm or any of them, shamelessly plugging. But
you're such a pro at this, Donners.
No, but that's what you need. You need, like, I'd encourage, leave the shakes now for a week. Give this a go. Green Farm, any of the products are incredible and you will be flying it around the place.
Now, Stephen Kelly joins us in studio as well. He's going to cast his eye over the Premier League for us. Stephen, Donica ate 5,000 calories after a game, right? So you're a footballer, different to rugby, different position to Donica, probably different energy outputs given the amount of weight you used to shift around the pitch. Like, after a game, what would you eat?
Yeah, we've been encouraged to eat as much as you can straight away just to rebuild all that carb and protein that you've lost, and especially if a game coming up quick, if you're playing in like Europe or you have a game on a Tuesday, it's so important that you eat so well between those games just to build yourself back up. It's injury prevention as well, and for me, I would have been the opposite than I tried to get everything from food intake. I rarely supplemented. I would have a protein shake after training and after game, but that would be it really. It was through my food and that I tried to keep myself going over, and that kind of works for me. So yeah.
So what you're saying is you wish there was a company like Green Farm around during your days.
Basically, yes.
if we could get that in a song by, please, Stephen, if you don't mind.
Oh, I think we have it covered now. We have a great new sponsor. We're all delighted about it. And by the end of the next few weeks, we are going to be super healthy.
Yes, absolutely.
That's it.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
Now, we are going to go through the Premier League very, very shortly. There are four games this evening. Arsenal, Norwich, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Everton, Leicester and West Ham and Chelsea. But before that, Stephen, we spoke last night about the League of Ireland and we were hoping that it was going to definitely be back on the 31st of July. There seemed to be a proposal yesterday that was going to be put in place, but that seems to not be the case today. It emerged a little bit earlier that the FAI board is set to review the process by which the decision was made to resume the League of Ireland season and in what format. So it doesn't look like we have white smoke. Now, there's a lot to that because the clubs were divided. Well, there was a lot of the clubs were in favour of a different proposal than the one that was put through yesterday, which was the same as it was going to be at the start of the season, with one team down and the playoff. But Stephen, the more this goes on, the further away football seems to feel.
Yeah, and the more condensed the season is going to have to be, because they're going to run out of time to fit the games in realistically. So, you know, everybody's looking for that start date for the first game, the first fixture to be on the board, and the longer they go and make a decision and come to terms with what has to happen, and you know, every party being happy. And I just don't think that's gonna happen. Not everybody's gonna be happy or content with the way the season goes on. And the last thing they want is for happen in some of the leagues in England where they just decided the points per game, because I think you're better off on the pitch and having a chance to play for those points instead of going on what you've earned already. So, you know, for the teams that are saying no, they just need to come to a conclusion and make a decision based on what's best for them. But like I said, not everybody's going to be happy with this decision.
Now, they've come out very strong, the teams that aren't happy with it. Waterford said that some teams might not come back at all. Sligo Rovers also issued a statement and they said they were particularly disappointed with what was being proposed. Do you have sympathy for the teams that are kind of holding firm in their stance and are not proceeding with what the FAI have proposed?
Every team is looking at themselves. They're trying to do what's best for what suits them and suits their club and suits them going forward and staying viable as a team and financial support and everything. So you can understand why they're sticking firm and why they want to do it. But there has to be some sort of middle ground. There has to be a place where they can both come to a conclusion and be happy with the outcome, or, you know, someone bites the bullet and gets on with it, because otherwise the league won't start back up. There has to be a conclusion. There has to be a set date, and everybody has to kind of get on board with some sort of proposal that may not be exactly what they want, but is enough to get football and get people back on the pitch.
We saw the reality of the pandemic, the effects of the pandemic today with Wigan Athletic going into receivership. So there are dangers out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
When there's no football, it's hard to see what's going to happen in the future, really.
That's it. You don't want to see teams being financially cut off and being in a position where they can't go forward and they can't move on as a team and bring players in and you know, get fans back into the stadium. So for everybody involved, the sooner the league restarts, the better it's going to be. I understand you don't want to be relegated and you want to give yourselves the best chance of staying in the top division, because that's where the financial support is. But they have to come to a conclusion. They have to reach a settlement. And for me, you know, you look at Wigan and you think, you know, a team like that, they were in the Premier League not too long ago, where we're doing extremely well, FA Cup finals. It's a sad day when a team like that is in administration. You just got to think what's going on behind the scenes.
Stephen, you're right, and you can understand why every team or club would look at themselves, but relegation aside, even the length of the season seems to be a stumbling block here, when you've players like Gary Rogers saying the season will be shorter than the decision making to come about it. You know, whatever about relegation, having the opportunity to get out of it is short.
Yeah, well, the sooner they make a decision, the sooner they can get back playing, because teams can put in place all the procedures they need to get themselves back onto the field. And like I said, the longer this goes on, the shorter the season is going to get realistically. So then they're going to be, you know, limited to even the amount of game time they have, and they just need to kind of come to a resolution and get, like I said, get people back on the pitch.
Well, there's 10 minutes gone in the 6 o'clock kickoffs and we already have two goals. Richarlison has scored for Everton and Gale for Newcastle. So Newcastle are 1-0 against Bournemouth and Everton are 1-0 against Leicester. Now, we will get into these games very, very shortly, but I think we need to start with Manchester United last night. Any Manchester United fans I know, they're all pretty happy today for good reason, Stephen.
I think so. I think the thing as well, you know, Liverpool all deserve the credit they've got. They've been phenomenal this season and all the talk has been about them, but you start to see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel for Manchester United.
15 games unbeaten in all competitions.
Yeah, they've started to put together. I think the problem for them for a long time was the level of inconsistency they were showing. They were up and down. They'd have 1 week where they're amazing, then great result, and then they drop out of it. You know, the last while they've been excellent, and Fernandez has been just so important for them. You know, the impact he's had straight away is being huge, and it's not often you see a player come in and do that straight away, have such an influence on the whole team gathering together. And even Pogba seems to be back on board, and you know,
it's generating excitement, that partnership.
It really is. And then the youth they have, the pace they have, defensively they seem more solid, they're more about themselves. And they look like they're going to be a threat. They look like they're going to be challenging. And if they can continue on this vein, and they're probably going to strengthen in the summer as well, you kind of feel next season makes for a really, really interesting tie between the big clubs.
But Stephen, whatever about his performance, is obviously scoring twice last night, it's his presence within the team. So in the 12 games he's been involved in, United have won 8 and drawn 4. They're brilliant people to have in your team, aren't they?
Oh, if you can have someone like that. I think, man, you've been screaming out for someone to be a leader, a talisman in the middle of the park to drive them on against Borough. And don't get me wrong, they've got some unbelievably talented players. Like Matic, I spoke with Matic. I think Matic is a wonderful player. I think he's gone off the boil at times, but, you know, his all-round game is generally excellent. And he was sublime for Chelsea. He's come to Manchester United and not been the same. But, you know, the talent they've got in there, and if this one player's game is so high and pivotal and everybody else is feeding off that, it makes a huge difference. His influence, and it might not be how his communication is, it might just be his level of performance on the pitch that lifts everybody else, and that seems to be happening.
And I think as well, when it's like, you know, the day after a game and you're not talking about David De Gea and mistakes and criticism and negativity, it's a good day.
Absolutely, and that's something that I had to go forward. You know, for a long time, as De Gea's contract was a big weight on their shoulders, and his form was dropping, and there was question marks whether he was worth what he was going to get paid. But he is a fantastic goalkeeper. He's capable of making the odd blunder, but you know, he's been extremely well received and been very at the top of his game for a long time. But you know, I think Manchester United, they do seem to have turned a corner, and going forward, you know, they're pushing. I think you're looking at Leicester here and you kind of feel they could drop out of the top four, and if anybody's going to be pushing for it, the way Man U are playing, you kind of think that they're the ones that are possibly going to get in there.
And Stephen, that's it. They're on 52 points, and you mentioned Leicester on 55, with just Chelsea above them on 54. So they're in that mix now, aren't they, for Champions League?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. You know, I think we spoke about on the show here about teams that were going to have to hit the ground running when they start back up, because it's such a short window to try and propel yourself into the top four. And, you know, you start off quick by winning your first few games, and Man U have done that. They've really put pressure, and Leicester are definitely looking over the shoulder. They've not been in good form, and for a long time now, they've kind of dropped off. They started the season like a house on fire, but you know, really after the first few months, they've not been the same. And you're looking at one team that's going to drop out, and you think Leicester, you know, Chelsea were excellent against City the other day, and you kind of feel that they've got the bit between the teeth as well. So, you know, everybody's looking at that extra spot as being Leicester's the one they're hunting.
The thing about Chelsea, though, is, okay, I don't think they've been amazing, but they're not losing games.
No, they're consistent. That they've been consistent. And I think they started off the season a bit topsy-turvy, really weren't excellent, but they've kind of leveled off, and they've been in that consistent performance for the last little while. They've had a couple of games where they've not performed great, but they've got such a talented squad, and what already they've strengthened. You see the players they're bringing in for next season, you kind of feel like every team looks like next year they're going to be a lot better. Well, the top five or six teams look they're going to be better than what they were this year.
And Frank Lampard, then, like, he seems to be improving all the time. Ability he has to make change, and to not just make changes, but to get his team to play better during a game by the changes he makes, which isn't an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. It's game management, and it's very hard for a manager to come in. And, you know, he's new to it. He's not in it long. And, you know, a lot of time he spent was in the Championship. At this top level in the Premier League, in the Champions League, where you're performing really high, making little changes in a game and keeping big egos and big personalities on board, that's extremely hard, because all these top players want to play every week, and if they're not playing, you're trying to get the back of ball. Olivier Giroud is the one that screams out to me that he looked like he was gone, looked like he was out, and he's been able to pull him back in, and he's been instrumental in the way they've been playing.
Just on that, Stephen, with the players he's adding, is he thinking of different strategies and formations he'd like to play as well, or is he just trying to get the best players on board?
I don't think he's the type of manager that's going to go and just buy the best names out there. I think he is buying players that will fit into the criteria of the way he wants his team to play. I don't think he's just doing a scattergun effect. You know, everybody's looking at the model that Klopp did, that Pep Guardiola did. They brought in specific players for specific positions to fit into the way their team plays and how they want to move forward as a club. And I think Lampard is definitely in that elk. He's going along those lines, and the players he's brought in look like they could only improve the way they play.
the bottom of the table, it's not kind of capturing the imagination like that I thought it was going to, because we're all kind of looking at the resurgence of Manchester United and thinking about top four, but like there is a lot to play for. It's just that the teams down there don't seem to be doing anything spectacular.
No, I think the bottom five teams, I'm not sure any of them have won since the restart. And that's not great for any of those teams.
Well, if you're trying to get out of the relegation zone, it's probably not a good way to be carrying on.
No, and the same about the Champions League spots. You wanted a quick start for the Tottenham, sort of Manchester United. To get into those Champions League spots, they had to perform well right out of the bat quickly. You expected the same for the teams in the bottom. If they wanted to have any chance of staying up, they had to show that fight, and they've not really done that. And for me, when you look at them, like, you know, I feel Norwich are probably gone, but there's four teams there and there's only a couple of points between them. Like, it's so up for grabs, and if anybody could put a little run together, they could probably put daylight between themselves and the other teams.
Does a team like Norwich just give up now at this stage? When you look at them at the weekend and their squad rotation, they seem to be prioritising cup.
Yeah, I don't think you can give up. I think once it's mathematically not gone, you have to think there's some chance, there's some miracle out there. And for a club like this, what have they got to lose? What have they got to lose playing their best team every week? You know, there's only a few games left in the season. They have to try and win as many as they possibly can to give themselves a fighting chance. I understand that as a club behind the scenes on the board, they're going to be battening down the hatches, thinking about next season if they're in the Championship, where they can slim down the wage bill, where they can possibly sell players, bring players in that are better for getting promoted than keeping them in the Premier League. So, you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But I think as the players go on the pitch, they're going to want to be playing.
Stephen, just on that, Aston Villa second from bottom on 27 points, and you were right, there's the, you know, Watford on 16th on 28, so there is a chance to get out of it. They have massive Irish following. What do they need to do, Villa?
Win games.
I think defensively they've been so poor this season, and it's the irony is people talk so highly of Tyrone Mings as a defender and how good he is, and then you think they've got someone like John Terry there in the background that should be putting this all together and giving the defensive shape about them, but defensively they've conceded so many goals. I think on average they need to score 3 a game to win, which is ridiculous. You can't do that in this league. And then the amount of emphasis and pressure that they're putting on Jack Grealish to go and win games for them, perform and play to a high standard, it's not practical to rely on one player. And they need to be more solid as a team. And, you know, if they can string a few games together, possibly. But they actually have a decent squad. It's just they just haven't been tight-knit enough as a unit. And they've conceded way too many goals.
Everton have now gone 2-0 up against Leicester, with Sigurdsson scoring a penalty on the 16th minute. Interesting start to the game, Stephen.
Yeah, again, Everton have been a good side. And Leicester, who we spoke about, they just don't seem to be at it. They don't seem to be pushing for it. And like I said, they are the target for everybody that's aiming for the Champions League, but they're targeting them. They're not targeting Chelsea, they're targeting Leicester. They're thinking these are going to drop out of it, these are on the way down, they're not performing well.
Teams, and the night that's in it, like, you know, that Chelsea are playing and like straight after them, to start so poorly.
Absolutely. And you know, Everton have been playing extremely well, I think, of late. They've put in some really good performances, and since Ancelotti's been on, there's been a bit of a revolution there. But Leicester, I think I read something about, since Brendan Rodgers has signed his new contract, that his win ratio has dropped dramatically. I'm not sure that's got anything to do with it, but you know, when you think you sign a 5-year deal and after that...
Well, it happens to players. Like there are players who sign big long contracts and then you don't see what, you know, you might have seen in earlier seasons.
Yeah, that it does happen, and players take their foot off the gas. They think, oh, I've got 5 years or 4 years here, you know. And they almost have a year sabbatical because they don't perform. As a manager, I wouldn't have thought that would be the case. And I don't think, from what I know of Brendan Rodgers and what I hear him, that's the way he would go about himself. But I think they got out to such an early lead and were so comfortable in the top four spot, I don't think they felt like they needed to kick on. And you just compare that to Liverpool, who were out in such an early lead, pushing for the top spot, 25, 23 points ahead, and they haven't once taken their foot off the pedal. I think leading from the front is much harder than people think, and for Leicester, they've not been able to do that.
Yeah, Stephen, I know I'm going off topic and Marie will kill me, but last night there was some incredible goals by Lionel Messi and Ronaldo. Did you see either of them?
I did, yeah. It's
Panenka on your 700th goal. Why not?
You're looking, like, these guys have scored like 700 and 738 goals, respectively, Messi and Ronaldo. And you think most players, if you have a good innings and a decent career, if you play 500 games, 400 games, that's an unbelievable. These guys have scored more goals than most people have played games. It's unbelievable what they do.
It doesn't seem like they're winding down any bit either.
And Ronaldo's 35, Messi's 33.
They're not that much younger than you, Donica.
No, I'm retired a couple of years and I'm 37, and you kind of think, you know, I just think they're just two people that you will never ever see the likes of again. I don't think you're ever going to have two players going like this at each other consistently at a level week in, week out, season after season for such a long time ever again.
I loved all the rows last night on social media about who was better and people just getting annoyed because Ronaldo wasn't getting enough credit.
I find it hard because I've played against Ronaldo a lot more than I've played against Messi because of the Premier League, and I hold him in such high esteem.
Against them a couple of times.
I don't think I could say he was the better player, but for me, Ronaldo was like, if you could design a football player in a science lab, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. I know that's not what people want. They want the magic of Messi and stuff and all, but if you could pick an athlete and say, give him the best attributes in every aspect of his game, who is it? It's Cristiano Ronaldo. But Messi does things that you can't even believe on a pitch. So just admire both of them and be lucky enough to be in a time where we can watch these players live.
Yeah, it is hard. Like, it is hard when you're living in it, though, to be able to appreciate them. As you said, it's only in years to come when we don't have people of those calibre, or even just to have that kind of rivalry. Because when you look at what's coming through, like, I don't know if we have anyone like that.
Not two they're going to push each other. Like that, and that's the thing. They have had such an intense rivalry, which is almost... they've not really spoke about that often, but they, every time one does something, Ronaldo breaks their hat-trick record, Messi matches it. Like, they do things back to back, and you know, I don't think we will ever see two players go head to head like this against each other at a level that these have done it for such a long time, because the longevity that they've had has just been out of this world.
Okay, well, I'm seeing a water break there now on the TV between Everton and Leicester, so I think it's time for us to take a break.
Game on, rugby.
When it comes to our Wednesday legends, we always try to make sure it's someone that embodies the best of being Irish. Peter O'Mahony is a Grand Slam winning Six Nations champion who joined an elite group of Irishmen when he captained the British and Irish Lions team in New Zealand. But he is green to the very core, be it with his work with Green Aware or trying to be Munster's answer to Alan Titchmarsh. This confrontational backward forward always wears his heart in his sleeve, and we're delighted Pete joins us now. Pete, how are you?
We're lucky we're not on Zoom now. My face after that would be dreadful. Like.
Not at all. It's been a tough few weeks, Pete, but you must be delighted to be back in flow, back in training, back around the lads.
Yeah, it's good to be back. You know, it was kind of a mad few weeks with regard to being involved in team sports for obviously all my life. You know, having no interaction with the lads other than over kind of FaceTime or whatever. It was good to be back in, and albeit small numbers and kind of social distancing, but it was good to be back.
From a physical point of view, Peter, what's the most difficult thing you had to adapt to?
I suppose probably being a father in general. Genuinely, I hadn't. You know, I think I spent, for the World Cup year, I spent over 220 days in a hotel, you know, when Theo was kind of in his first year and he was only 2.5. So, you know, it's been the longest period I've spent with the kids, you know, since either of them were born. So, you know, adapting to their routines, their crack, obviously having me at home all the time was a novelty. So they were going mental for most of it. But, you know, it was great fun. I have to say it was really enjoyable to be around them for that period, and that extended period was great.
Was it enjoyable for them?
So, you'd have to ask them. No, I think so, yeah. The odd time Theo, even when he fall, he might even come looking for me rather than Jeff, which was very strange.
220 days. Like, I know we chat often that we're lucky to be in rugby and we're well looked after, but that must be so difficult, you know, for Jess, for your family there, to be away that length of time.
Yeah, look, you know, I probably have the better deal of the two, you know what I mean? I know we train hard and, you know, it's high-pressure environment, but, you know, two young kids like that, you know, I know from the last few weeks is tough going with the two of us, not a mind being on your todd like Jess is most of the time. So it's difficult. It certainly is difficult, and it's a big commitment. So, you know, you take these things for granted, but, you know, there's some things you won't be taking for granted anymore.
Yeah, so you're back in training, back in the High Performance Centre in Limerick, and you've been in smaller groups, Pete, with an eye now towards branching out and into squad training. How's that been? Like, we listened to Jurgen Klopp saying that he had to train and adapt his training methods. What have Munster been doing to get ready?
Yeah, similar again, you know, it's we had a lot to do with regard to compliance to the HSC and that kind of thing, but getting the High Performance Centre, I suppose, laid out in the way that they were happy with. like we're still social distancing regard to even in the gym. You know, there's no one on the same bench at the same time. Even the bench next to you would be free. You know, we're lucky we have a big gym, so like a group of 12, you can space well out. So like, to be fair, this week we got a ball back last week. It was just conditioning and gym. We had a bit of skills work this week. But you know, you're sanitizing everything after each use. You know, sanitizing balls. You know, GPS systems need to be cleaned down. You know what I mean? It's a very different scenario, but it's, you know, you we'll all do it to the best of our ability just to get us back playing, you know.
And how does the body feel after an extended break like that?
Body's great. It is, yeah. It's, you know, I think more than anything, it's a mental refreshment. You know, the challenges, you know, I've actually, like, doing a bit of looking back, I've played a lot of rugby for the last 4 or 5 years. I've been lucky enough to stay away from even small-term injuries. So I've played a lot of rugby, and it's tough mentally. Looking back, I was getting tired. Not that I wasn't enjoying my game, my rugby, but it was difficult and becoming more difficult to get up every weekend for huge games. And I think this last few weeks mentally has given me a great break and refreshment and a hunger to get back now into it and get stuck in again.
With that in mind, when you hear conversations starting about the realignment of a global calendar, then, like, how do you feel about it when you see the benefit of that break?
Yeah, look, there's lots of pros and cons for both sides of this argument. And, you know, from a player's point of view, it needs to be taken into account that there's a lot of rugby as it is. And, you know, breaks are hugely important. I think from an Irish rugby point of view, we're very lucky that there, if you, as the governing body, look after us very well with regard to minutes, with regard to rest. But, you know, from an international player's point of view, you know, clubs might suffer, you know, losing players because they might be on breaks when it's, you know, when it's time to play, you know, potentially big games for provinces as well, because, you know, guys will get burned out. And as I said, the IRFU will look after players regardless of what time of the year it is, I suppose, for the club particularly. So, you know, there's lots of arguments for or against it, but we'll have to wait and see what comes out of it.
Pete, I know you're a big club man, Cork on your club. Brilliant news that Munster had to use 30 players between senior and academy within the squad that togged out with the AIL. But we're seeing players like Dan Carter, Ardy Savea going back and playing with his club. I know it's difficult at the international level, but provincial players, could we be using our clubs better to bring up the standard?
Look, I think so. I think, Dunners, even if you look the last kind of 12 months, you know, even guys like Shane Daly, you know, he played a lot of Aller and Eagles the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, won all our leagues with Conn, and now he's, you know, he's really important for us all this season and last. You know, there are guys coming through who have played a lot of it. We certainly, you know, if there's windows, you know, you've seen before when guys are coming back from, say, long-term injuries, and there might be a international window on and there isn't a provincial game maybe for them to play. You know, they're ideal opportunities to get back in with your club, but it's hard to find a window at the moment, you know, with the amount of professional games going on. It's just difficult to see players having the ability to get back in. But there's certainly the quality there to go back to a game. You know, there would be a high enough standard for us to go back and to fit in and certainly play at a high level.
So social distancing is very handy when it comes into dealing with people like Dave Kilcoyne. But when you're welcoming two World Cup winners like Damien Delande and Orji Snyman, how have you greeted them into the squad? How are they fitting in?
Look, it's great to be signing the calibre player like that. You know, Matt Gallagher as well. Obviously, two World Cup winners. You know, you need to sign guys like that. You know, I was speaking already about even, you know, the teams that you would have played in and won with. You know, guys like Rua and Matt, Trevor Halstead, Dougie, obviously, you know, going back as far as, you know, Jim Williams, John Langford. You know, these guys put a stamp on the provinces, and then going to clubs like Leinster, I suppose. These, Nasiwa, Rocky Elsom, you know, they were important figures for Leinster for winning trophies, you know, and they left their trademarks on the club for and probably lived with the clubs for a long time. You know, the professionalism they bring, obviously the impact rugby-wise, you know, the people there in general. You know, Dougie spent, I think, 10 years of his life here with his family and made an incredible difference to Munster. You know, so hopefully these guys will be long-term signings and make as big a difference as the people I named with them.
It must be exciting having them around, like not even just around the team, around the city. Like it's, you know, it's been such a tough time for people to have something to look forward to, whether it's a match or seeing World Cup winners in the red jersey in action.
Yeah, look, it's exciting from everyone's point of view. As I said, you know, it's really important to sign and to sign well. And I think we've done that with these guys. You know, they're going to make a big difference. You've seen they come off a World Cup win. You know, the hunger they must have, obviously their ability speaks for itself, but, you know, the difference stuff like that makes, even to supporters, you know, to come out and see guys of that standard is great.
Is it wrong to think that they'll fit straight in with the culture just because the likes of Razzie, Felix Jones, that, you know, surely these guys were chatted to, you know, that they're a good fit for Munster?
Yeah, you'd hope guys have done their homework. Obviously, we've that kind of angle in with the South African players that we've had the experience of coaches and that kind of thing, and you'd like to think we've tapped a lot of guys for info on these people, and you know from the offset it looks like they're going to fit in really well. They're, you know, I only spoke to Damien very briefly, but he's in my group at the moment, and he seems to be a nice person, and he seems to be keen to get stuck into training, and you know first impressions are great, so. You know, fingers crossed.
And Peter, just with regards to James Cronin and the anti-doping ban that he received, as a captain, is it difficult when someone on your team, when that happens and you know, you've got to be in the leadership position and try and deal with the fallout that comes with that?
Look, James has had to deal with that. That was his situation, and you know, it really wasn't anything to do with the player, the rest of the player group. That was something that he needed to sort out on his own, and that's really all I'd have to say on that.
But just from a captain point of view, what do you do then?
I don't have anything else to comment on it.
Just on leadership there, though, Pete, when you've been captain now for a long time, how do you keep evolving your leadership style, or that you look to improve, or what are you doing to keep evolving as a leader?
Look, it's been a great window, actually, Dunners, to be honest, for that kind of thing. I suppose there was a lot of reflecting back and looking back, you know, for the first time, probably for a proper look back in your whole career and on what you've been doing, what you can improve on, you know, what you haven't been doing very well. And we had some great conversations with the Munster leadership group and the Irish one as well on what we can change and do better and upskilling that kind of side of things. And you know, it's hard to do when you're backing up games week on week and you're covering and you're looking on to, you know, European games and international games, and they're so important. That kind of stuff can kind of fade away and kind of not be looked at and scrutinised by each of us. And we got a chance to do that over the last few weeks and talk to people outside the group, the immediate group and different fields. And look, it was really refreshing to hear their points of view. It was refreshing to hear, you know, what the guys in the different leadership groups had to say about different points. And I think we've made some changes, you know, to both groups that will stand to us going forward, and not just short-term, long-term as well.
You mentioned that great window. In that, you barely left your garden. Anytime you look at any form of social media post, you're out there. You're quite the green fingers kid, aren't you?
Yeah, look, I love it. I suppose I was very lucky over the last week, you know, to have a garden and to be able to get out. And I know there was people who don't have that kind of space, unfortunately. And, you know, it's not something I take for granted, but it was great to be able to get out and, you know, bring the smallies out and get stuck into a few projects that we've had planned for a long time. And, look, it's a great way of, I suppose, escaping a little bit and, you know, just getting, you know, a little bit of mental refreshment and a bit of calm time out there. Well, it's not too calm when you're too smallies, but it's great to have them involved as well for some of us.
You're someone that we'd always see as being so competitive. Are you competitive about the garden? Like, do you want to have the best garden around?
Definitely.
I'm competitive. I'm certainly competitive. I have a little form of kind of OCD, so I do like things tidy, which, you know, isn't always recommended from the experts, but look, I think it's fairly diverse out there, but I do like to have the stripes fairly straight on the lawn.
I love it. Give me an honest answer on this then. So to be fair, you've to leave your garden unattended for an up-and-coming Lions tour next summer. Which teammate could you trust to leave in charge of your garden?
If Conor Murray hadn't been selected, I'd probably leave him here.
Fair enough. Pete, thanks a million, honestly, for joining us today. The O'Callaghan's Garden is overdue a visit if you're around over the next few days. Be more than welcome.
Oh, sounds good, yeah, great.
Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Not a bother. See you
thanks.
Guys.
Game On
2FM. Welcome back to Green Farm. I mean, Game On. yet another plug there, Marie. You'd be glad to know you can visit www.greenfarmfinefoods.com and find out about the incredible products and get some delicious recipes. Anyway, there's been a goal in the Everton match, hasn't there?
There's been a few goals now. We've had two. But before we get to that, there's one small thing I want to pick you up on. Peter O'Mahony.
Yes.
Do you think he's ever going to come down into your garden?
No, I don't. I don't. One thing I will say about him, though, and he is a tough nut, but he's a good fella to have in your back. And I probably told you this before. I went to Worcester for a while, and he used to drop logs over to Jenny because he knew I was away, and that would be a thing. And he never, it took a bit of time to find out about actually doing it, but he would always leave the log box out the back full of logs. And I just thought, there's a decent fella. He wasn't doing it for credit or even to be known, and he wasn't even doing it for me. He was doing it for Jenny and the kids. He's there, that clown will walk out the door and won't make sure. So he is a tough nut, and we got some tough points out of him, but he is he's a good teammate. He's a good guy to have at your back. And Stephen, you'd know all about that, those kind of fellas that have your back.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great to have people that will literally just, you take to war with you and you know that would die for you. So it's, having people like that will support you through thick and thin, it's always great to have on your team.
So we do have a few goals. Stephen, run us through any score updates.
So Arsenal are 2-0 up against Norwich. So another team in the bottom that we're discussing just haven't done enough. And Newcastle are 2-0 up away to Bournemouth. Bournemouth, again, just have been struggling this season. And they always have a dip in form. And it's usually a 10-12 game and they come back from it. But this season, they haven't been able to get back out of it, and they're in real risk of going down. And now Everton are 2-0 up against Leicester. There was a penalty from Sigurdsson to make it 2-0, and Leicester have got back into of late. They can be turning the screw slightly and getting more into a few final third entries, but still not showing you enough about themselves to be actually in that fourth place position.
Okay, well, we are heading for halftime in those games. 42 minutes gone, and Aubameyang and Xhaka are away with the Arsenal goals. Now it's time for some more rugby.
Game On Rugby.
When Audi Ireland looked for an ambassador to promote their luxury cars, they had certain criteria: well designed, perfectly engineered, incredibly productive. Leinster and Ireland centre Gary Ringrose ticks all of these boxes. Then you add his speed, agility and power without even mentioning his good looks, and you know why Audi got the right man. We're delighted Gary joins us now. Gary, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks very much for that.
Dunners, they're going to be rewriting their advertising after listening to that, I think.
Just so we're clear, we have plugged everything for Audi now. Is there anything else we need to chat about, the E-Range or anything like that?
I think you've covered it.
Yeah. It must be great to be back into rugby, Gary.
Yeah, it is. It's brilliant now. The last 2 weeks has been great being back to a step in the direction towards what the new normal is going to look like, but it's a step all the same.
We've heard from a lot of sports people over the last few months just about how they've used the pandemic to try and develop different parts of their game or become mentally sharper or work on their nutrition. Was there anything in particular that you did during the downtime to work on yourself?
I suppose a little bit of all of the above. Kind of was a good opportunity. Especially after a week or two at the start, I think no one knew how long it was going to go on. And then, because it was for us anyways, initially the tour to South Africa was cancelled with Leinster. And then after a week or two, I think then the writing was on the wall as to how long we were actually going to be on lockdown. So, kind of a bit of everything. Thankfully, my old school, I live pretty close to Blackrock College, so I was down able to work on a few things on the pitch, use the pitches there fitness-wise and skills-wise. And then also was able to finish a bit of college as well, so I'm still studying in university, so it was a good opportunity. I had no excuses to give to lecturers, I had to knuckle down and get a bit of work done then, so a few bits and bobs like that.
When you did go back training and pictures emerged, everybody was commenting on the size of Johnny Sexton. Have you got bigger? We didn't see any pictures of you.
I don't think I'm as big as Johnny if there was any good pictures. That would have been out there. Yeah, I think Johnny and I'm sure a few others have took the opportunity to kind of get a setup at home, gym-wise, and work on things like that.
Yeah, he's looking to get out of the house. We both know that. But who has come back in great shape as well? You know, who have you been impressed with? I don't know what the test is now. I'm presuming it's a Bronco, but which one of your teammates has brought it
up? Well, when we started out, we kind of were in small groups, so it was great getting back, seeing a few faces, but it was only kind of groups of five or six. So I know in my group, Hugo Keenan smashed his Bronco, so he got it in 4 minutes, 11 seconds, which was something else. But yeah, no, most people have come back in great shape because it was, as you said, such a good opportunity to work on things like that. And we had an abundance, certainly as rugby players, an abundance of time to do so. Because everything was ground to a halt. So a lot of guys did have really taken advantage of the time and they're coming back in great shape.
We spoke to Peter Mahoney earlier. Now, he's obviously at a different stage of his career to you, but he did say that he thinks his career will be extended because he's had that time to recover and take a little break and even to take a mental break. Have you found anything like that? I know you're obviously younger, but what are the benefits, do you think?
Yeah, I suppose, again, it's hard for me to comment on it really, but I can imagine maybe the break we've had from games will pay dividends in a year or two's time without knowing, really. I think when we do go back into rugby, the next, whatever, 12 months are going to be pretty intense, so I wouldn't be surprised if that makes up for any time off we've just had, you know, that third away. But, yeah, definitely coming off, I don't even know how many weeks it is now, but having that amount of time without matches, without the physicality of matches and training and stuff, any niggles and knocks, just to have that extra bit of time to heal. So that's why I'd say most people now coming back for their clubs will be feeling pretty good and fresh.
Yeah, and everybody is excited that rugby is coming back, but there's no doubt that there is a little bit of a cloud, Gary, hanging over it. Just before we chatted to you, the IRFU and the RPI, they released a statement and said they've concluded their meeting regarding possible salary cuts, but there's no agreement yet. Is there a bit of a cloud now hanging over a return to play?
No, I don't think really, to be honest. It's one of those things because the picture's changing so quickly and it changes on a day-to-day basis. So only in the last couple of weeks we've had the fixtures confirmed that are happening. And as we've seen down in New Zealand, there's actually been crowd attendance at those games. So there's still a bit of time to go. So I think everyone's so excited to get back playing. I certainly don't think there's a cloud hanging over at all.
One player stuck in the middle of that would be Rob Kearney, but it's also Fergus McFadden. It must be great to be able to, you know, the way their contracts were finishing up, to give them a send-off now, you know, and just be around those guys again.
Yeah, definitely. That's one thing that has been really tricky around this time is because of the contract windows. Obviously, it's kind of the way the schedule is now. It's kind of messed with that a bit, but the fact that Fergus and Rob will get to play and see out this year with us is brilliant, and it's great to have them around the place for as long as we can because they're just such great guys, obviously on the pitch but as well as off the pitch. So obviously when I heard that news I was delighted, and think I can speak for everyone to say how happy we were that they would hang on for a couple more months, and hopefully we can give them the send-off we deserve. It's motivation in itself to get them to finish on a high.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, there can be some big jerseys in sports that carry a heavy burden, but there's no bigger in rugby as a blue or green number 13. How have you found kind of putting your print on that shirt?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose I never really thought of it like that at all. I was faced with a couple of challenges along the way and still am, so getting comfortable or complacent never was something that I did or coaches would let any players around me do, so or feel even. So yeah, I think it was just, for me, it was always listening to the voices that mattered and in coaches and what they were looking for in areas that I could get better at, and equally kind of a lot of players that I'm lucky enough, and Fergus and Rob being to name a few, that to listen to them and learn off them, and not much has really changed. Like from when I would have started to now, it's still kind of the same mindset really. There's always something that I know on a personal level that I can improve on and get better at, so it's always trying to find that and work on that, as well as continuing to evolve whatever strengths you might have as well. So it's kind of like a constant growth process really, and I would have been lucky enough to learn that off some of the senior players that I've been exposed to from the start.
just for all us rugby nuts, it's brilliant to have it back. The 22nd and 29th of August, we get back underway. But just from a player's point of view, is it good? You mentioned New Zealand there. Is it good to be coming back and preparing for an Interpro? Just, you know, I not being disrespectful or anything, but you know it's going to be a quality game straight away.
Yeah, I think the Interpros always are, I mean, you've always put them on the same level as a test match, the level of intensity. Was, I think, we've gone so long without rugby, I think that's what everyone wants, really, certainly from a player perspective, is to dive straight back in. And then I've no doubt supporters who've missed rugby matches being on the TV will feel the same way. So we do have plenty of time, in the sense that we've, if all the provinces kind of started last week, or I think it was either last week or this week, we still have a fair few weeks to, as well as you were saying, working on things physically and mentally during the break, and now with the pre-season opportunity. So I think everyone will be bubbling to go when it comes, when the end of August comes around.
And then there's the big one, the weekend of the 8th of September, Leinster versus Saracens. After the way the final went, Gary, like, that is becoming a massive game now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was always, after the disappointment of last year, you just want to get out and go again, really. And lucky enough, we've gotten to the stage now. We have another opportunity. We're into the business end of Europe, and yeah, so it's a massive game, for considering what's at stake. The fact that what's just gone before, we all want to get back and start playing and be involved in games like that. And then even adding in the likes of Fergus and Rob and guys who might be finishing up with us, the opportunity to give them a send off. So there's, as I was saying, there's no shortage of motivation going into that game. But obviously there's a few games to go before, so I think what's worked for us in the past with Leinster is taking it week by week, and focusing on the immediate challenge, which will be the first Interpros coming up. So I think now we have a window to sort of plan ahead, because it will be an intense couple of weeks. But as those games start drawing closer, I think we'll narrow our focus and take it week by week.
For you, does that one stand out a little bit more? You know, is there something in you that, you know, wants to get back there, right the wrongs? You know, we've all been on big days and probably not gone the way we'd like. Is the Saracens one you've marked for a long way out?
I think so. Well, again, sort of from speaking from a personal perspective, for me to be involved in a losing final, you want to get... It's such a bitter feeling. I don't know if you know the feeling, Dominic. Did you ever get to a final?
I know too well, and I've been the fault of a few of them.
Well, yeah, so it's, I mean, after a game like that, you just want to get back and, as you said, right the wrong. And that's the same for me on a personal level, to lose a final. It's such a tough feeling, that you just want to get back and win and be on the other side of it, because obviously from the other side, it's an amazing feeling. So that's kind of the motivation after losing against Saracens, which we were able to do when it came to our semi-final, our Pro 14 semi and final after Saracens last year. But definitely having lost to them in the final, you know, there was that extra bit of motivation, not that there would have been any shortage of it, but going into them again. So I'd say most guys feel pretty similar.
Gary, we've had such a long period with no sport that we've had not a lot to talk about. So we've kind of talked about everything off the field. And one of the things that we're starting to touch on is the Lions. Is it too soon to start talking about it, do you think?
I think that's up for you to decide.
Are you talking about it, thinking about it?
No, well, certainly not talking about it or thinking about it at the moment, because of, as you talk, how intense the calendar is going to be up to that point to start looking down the line. I think it'd be detrimental to the present moment. So I think the only thing we can do as players is focus on the intensity that's coming, it's starting at the end of August, and then whatever happens a couple of months down the line, deal with that then.
Yeah, we also love to touch on the AIL and the importance of it. And we had a brilliant moment last year when you scored your hat-trick against Benetton in the Champions Cup match. But our highlight of the weekend was your brother, Jack, scoring a hat-trick for UCD over Trinity.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I remember coming off the pitch, one of my mates, or I can't remember, someone was telling me that you... Well, first of all, I asked how UCD did, because I knew they're obviously my club, but knew he was playing. And then when I heard he got a hat trick, it was something else. It was delighted for him. So I think I know, certainly from his perspective, that he's pretty keen for the season to get back up and running the AIA. I think everyone wants rugby going again across all levels.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, thanks for joining us on Game On and best of luck with the season ahead.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. A quick update at halftime. Arsenal are leading Norwich 2-0. Bournemouth are trailing Newcastle by 2 goals and Everton are 2 up against Leicester. And the longer the evening goes on, the more it seems, Stephen, that Manchester United are going to catch up with Leicester.
Oh, if you're betting Man, you'd be absolutely lumping on Man U catching them. Leicester have been decent in possession, but they just looked a bit toothless. They haven't been able to have that cutting edge going forward, and Everton looked very dangerous on the counter-attack, and every time they've broken them they looked like they were going to score. The young lad Anthony Gordon set up the first goal for Charleston, and then the second one, bit dubious penalty, I think VAR again, it was hard to call really from both hands up in the air, but probably made the right decision in the end. But Leicester just, you know, seemed a bit of a shadow of themselves compared to what they were. They were so free-flowing in goal scoring before that.
Are we doing Everton a bit of a disservice here, though? Because if you look at their longest unbeaten runs, Liverpool are atop of the table, but Everton are in second.
No, they are. No, honestly, since Ancelotti's been in, Everton have been excellent. They've really come together as a side. The team shape, you know, he's got players firing. The likes of Calvert-Lewin has been excellent for them. Richarlison's been back in form. Even Seamus for us is great for Ireland, but he's been back in the team, playing regularly, performing well. Captain's armband on. So, you know, I think they've improved so much since he's taken over. And at one point we were talking about before Christmas, their run of results and the games coming up were horrendous, and everybody was thinking these could be right in the bottom three towards after Christmas, and they've come out and they look very good.
I know. I
should just clarify that's at home, by the way.
Yes,
I meant
very good. I know we're tight in time, Stephen, but do you think Chelsea will be watching that and thinking we've an opportunity now to even get away?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Chelsea will feel like they're in good form. You know, beating City the way they did, they just have a very good shape about them. And they're, again, another team that look very good going forward. Loads of style, loads of pace, good intricate football. And defensively, they've been very solid too. So for them, they're going to be thinking, right, this is an opportunity. Put some daylight between us and, you know, stop Man U breathing down our neck. Let's get them chasing Leicester and not us.
Okay, guys, that is all we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow.
Game On 2FM.